See you next Tuesday.
Like, see you next Tuesday.
You're listening to See You Next Tuesday.
Hey, this is Brian Posehn, and you're listening to See You Next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday.
Caca Levice.
Disciples of Troy Cyple.
Oh, Troy. We're cool guy, Troy.
There's no way that this guy can have a normal life when you have a penis that big.
Caca Levice, my name is Biff Scrivener, but my friends call me Cool Guy Troy. My name is, in fact, Troy, and this is See You Next Tuesday. Thank you so much for eavesdropping this week. See You Next Tuesday is the intersection of an individual's intellect and idiocy. See You Next Tuesday is the Nutella of podcasts. So just sit with that and think about it. Now, today on the show, we have an amazing guest. His name is Jordan Brady. He's a stand-up comedian. He is a director, more a director nowadays, but still does stand-up now and then. And his most notable work would be I Am Comic. It's a documentary. You can find it on Netflix, but you should go support this guy's career so he can make more of these movies and buy it or rent it from iTunes. So, thank you, Jordan, and I hope you enjoy this interview. Can we do that one again? That was kind of corny. We don't have time. I live about 40 minutes outside of Philly. So,
What's that city called?
Well, if you know where, like, Bam Margera is from, he's from Westchester. I'm about 10 minutes away from there.
Is that near King of Prussia?
Oh, absolutely. It's about 25 minutes down the road there. So,
before you were born, I played the King of Prussia Comedy Club. It was a comedy club, like Howard Johnson.
Really?
And it was supposedly a good gig.
They have like a one night a week thing?
I think it was a weekend gig back then.
Oh, cool. I definitely haven't heard of that, so it's probably long gone, unfortunately. But I hate starting out interviews, especially since we're, you know, strangers. It's so contrived. I'd rather be sitting in a room chatting, but it is what it is. And thanks a lot for being so nice to talk to me.
Of course. Now, aren't you going to prison?
Yes, next Thursday.
Why the fuck are you? Why the fuck are you going to prison?
Well, you see, I got a DUI last April. Okay, and I'm 28 now, and I happen to be a party boy back in my younger 20s, and I accumulated two back in my early 20s. So this is the big three. So so now I got to pay the piper, and I think that's about enough alcohol for Troy.
How long are you in the clink?
90 days. 90 days.
Then you get a free... You get a free slate, like a clean slate? Do they say, okay, reset?
Here's what happens. I do the 90 days. I come out. I get a beautiful fashion accessory that goes around my ankle, right, for 270 days. And nowadays, it's not just, they don't just know where you are. It actually, I don't know what the proper term is, but it analyzes your sweat for alcohol, so they know if you're drinking.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So it's either psychedelics or sobriety. But
what about weed and things like that?
The problem with weed is I'll be on probation and
you do piss tests.
Exactly. So
you know what, Troy? High on life, baby.
High on life. I'm working on it. I'm working on it. And part of that reason is why I'm talking to you. My outlet is comedy. And I'm gonna, once all this bullshit is done, why are we talking about me so much, by the way?
Well, I'll tell you why, because you wanted to talk to me because of I Am Comic.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Okay, so one of the names that we ran through was addiction. Like, stand-up comedy is an addiction.
Absolutely, and some of...
Like, alcoholism and weed and you know, I struggle with addiction to weed, to food,
yep,
to sex. Mm-hmm. I mean, you name it. Comedians are
obsessive,
obsessive compulsive, you know, usually a little ADD sprinkled in there, but at our core, we have an addictive gene. And you know, my buddy Rich Scheidner in the movie,
sure,
has struggled with alcohol. He's been clean for years.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I think 20 some years. But he'll do, you know, go to meetings and, you know, do shows to support, you know, an AA group. By the way, they should drop the whole fucking anonymous part of Alcoholics.
There's
anonymous,
nothing
everyone
anonymous.
Everyone goes, oh, you know, my buddy and I met in the program.
Yeah, and then they'll tell their story. They'll tell the other person's story.
So that, you know, you may find that some of your Pennsylvania comedians could help you out.
Yeah, well, I'm in the foundling stages. I'm just you know, an open micer trying to build a rep, but I'm starting to meet people. I talked to Hannibal Buress a little while ago. I got him on the show.
He's hilarious,
fucking awesome, and
I've never met him. I just hear it. I downloaded stuff.
Oh yeah, he's the same in person. Wow. He's just so quick and witty, but
he seems like a nice guy too.
Oh, so nice, so nice. And I fucked up at the top of the interview, giving his credits. I was like, "Yeah, he spent a year writing for SNL, and he's a current writer at 30 Rock." And immediately he stopped. Whoa, whoa, whoa! I don't write there anymore. And I was like, well, what happened? Tell us the story. And he's like, I left. And you know that demure, you know, delivery that he has is, it was funny, yeah, but I felt like a jackass.
Troy, you're going to like cut yourself some slack, man, because doing a podcast,
yep,
is not the same as being a hardcore journalist.
No, and
I'm
that
sorry to break it to you, but you know,
no, it's clear from just going through my archives. and I actually do some comedy. It's not just this isn't WTF. I don't just talk to the comedians. I try to since I'm so far from the city, I try to you know, create some comedy through this too as an outlet.
God willing, huh?
God willing, exactly. And it's so strange. Like, I can, through the hosting site, I can see what geographically where the downloads are. And the day after I released the Hannibal Buress, I was looking, and it's like there's people in Nicaragua, people in fucking Djibouti, like, where, crazy places. And it makes you think, what do they think of this asshole American and his very...
Hannibal Buress is not an asshole.
No,
oh, you're talking about you.
I'm talking about me. Yeah, I'm talking about me.
Well, you will find that if you have the ability to see the stats,
mm-hmm,
if you interview me, you'll find that I am huge in the Aleutian Islands.
Oh, well, I will.
Big following.
I will definitely let you confirm that when that tomorrow.
To be honest, I don't even know where the Aleutian Islands are. I just know it's a funny-sounding island.
It sounds great. I'll go anywhere.
Yeah. Guadalampur is another funny place. I don't really know where it is on the map, but I love saying Guadalampur.
How about Djibouti?
Djibouti. Yeah,
it's sexual.
That's almost too funny.
Yeah. It's almost hacky. But,
What is hacky to the kids today?
Well,
what is a hack premise? Like, it used to be airline food and
See, whatnot, the kids, but, that's a broad term because I don't consider myself like too far on the alt side, on the alt comedy side, or on the traditional side. So I'm not, I don't know. I don't know what is hacky. There, I know I can say that I think that overusage of irony is kind of hack nowadays.
That's interesting. I would agree. I mean, if everything's ironic, like, where's the joke?
And that's not to say that you can't use that as a comedic device. I just think that it's far overused by the younger, not even stand-ups, but just generally people in their 20s. I mean, look at the hipsters in Portland, Oregon with their facial hairstyles and stuff like that, you know. But
yeah, it's weird. If you're in your 20s and you're wearing a handlebar mustache,
there's something
you had better do it with irony.
Yeah. Oh,
but
absolutely.
Still from across the street, you still look like kind of a doofus in a handlebar mustache.
Yeah, you really do. And you're definitely not getting pussy unless she's a weirdo. Probably. I don't know.
Hey, know what? There's Which could be good advice for some people.
Well, I don't.
You get a little weird pussy, put on a snap-on handlebar mustache.
Maybe that's why they call it the strange.
See, that's got a little wordplay in it.
Yeah, see that? What do you think about?
Speaking of pussy.
Yes.
Are you scared about going to the clink? Going to the big house? Going to the slammer?
I'm not.
Is it that kind of slammer? Like,
No. Go ahead. No, well, no.
I mean, I would be scared. I'd be scared like someone's going to go, hey, you're a little pudgy. They start grabbing my man titty or something.
Well, the problem is I'm skinny. I can't gain weight. And but that being said, I'll be with nonviolent criminals. It's a county prison. It's not a state prison. It's not what do they say in Office Space? A federal fuck you in the ass prison. It's not like that deal. It's just mostly people like me, mostly drug related, DUI related, or parole violators and stuff like that. So, but at the same time, it's a bunch of clowns. So, I was the last time that this bullshit happened, I had to do like 5 days, and I just kept my head down and read books, and I was out. And
this is not your first time.
No, second time.
Boy, you got to get it together, man. You don't want
to. Oh, this is.
Don't make long term friendships in prison.
No, definitely not. I'm not trying to build a reputation in that respect. But,
and if I was going to any prison, it's still a bunch of dudes. You never know if they're locked up for a while, you know.
Things happen.
You might want to consider develop a rash.
A rash.
Like,
rub
poison oak on your dick or something.
That is good advice.
Something to keep people away, and put it also like on your neck and on your hand. Just no one. Like, short of being a leper, just do something grotesque to your skin.
Yes.
That'll last the first couple of weeks, and then everyone will forget about it. There'll be fresh meat, you know, after
it
wears off.
I will have to do something because I am a sexy motherfucker. So, I mean, there's going to have to be some type of deterrent. Also, something I've learned from taking the train frequently to Philly. You have to.
Wait, taking the train, is that a prison? Is that a prison?
No,
train?
No, quite literally taking the train.
Okay, you mean literally taking the train. Okay.
Not taking, well.
Hey, I don't know,
Yeah, there's a couple ways you could go with that one, but. But, excuse me, I kind of have a flu right now. That'll.
Keep the flu. That happens.
Yes, true.
The early phlegm cough you have is good for the.
That'll keep them away.
Good for the big house.
Keep them away from the butt. But, riding the train, I've learned, and waiting at bus stops when necessary, you gotta out crazy the crazies so they don't want to fuck with you. You know what I mean?
So, absolutely.
So that's my angle.
But
this is like a self-help cast.
Actually, I did like a 15-minute monologue on my anxiety and depression on the same episode that I interviewed Hannibal Buress. Not because I felt self-righteous, it's because it was I had to get it off my chest, and this case has been lingering over my head for a while, so the comedy hasn't been quick in coming, if you know what I mean. Some people can go on stage with and use their depression to their advantage. I kind of have to be in a good mood to be funny and to create funny observations or premises and stuff like that. What about you? How did you work when you were the 8 years you were working? As far as like
8 years. What 8 years I was working? Where'd you get that?
Weren't you a touring comedian for 8 years? In the
80s? It was more than 8 years, but I just wonder how you came up with 8 years. Like, what kind of research did you do?
Where did I see it?
King of Prussia Library?
Yes, it's in the archives.
The Wikipedia page.
Well, I think it meant 8 years strictly as a stand-up before you branched out into TV and other things.
Oh, I was just curious, man. I couldn't even tell you. I would say it was probably from when I left high school and dabbled in college and quit that.
Yeah.
Started going around. So it was probably like 12 to 15 years. And then I have a show this Saturday.
Nice.
Improv in L.A.
Nice.
A guy named Wayne Fetterman. We're going to do a duo act.
I've heard of him.
Wayne Fetterman. He's a Jew. He's a Jew comedian. That's all you need. He's quite funny. He used to write on the Jimmy Fallon program.
Okay, sure.
And he's out of Comedy Central special and been all over TV.
I would probably know some of his. See, I have ADD and like names and faces get mixed up. Sometimes I'll remember the name and faces, but if I saw and heard him, I would probably,
he's the only guy I know that does a bit about Dokken, the heavy metal.
Dokken, oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, he found something that no one can steal, I guess. I mean, that's part of your documentary about how, there's only so much a pool of ideas to draw comedy from, right?
And you touched on something. I think if you go up and talk about something that's real in your life, it to me, that's where the best humor comes from.
And so
if you're an ironic person, you know, you'll stretch the irony, but irony in general is not a natural thing. So I see your point about, okay, it's enough. And maybe young comics are copying the wave of irony that came before them. So
Hedberg,
now we're ready for something new.
Stephen Wright, yeah. And Hedberg. But
before that, it was sarcasm.
Yes.
In the 90s, there was a lot of sarcasm.
Yeah, and oversized suits. But
oh, man, the big suits, big hair. See, what's crazy is now doing comedy again,
mm-hmm.
My sons that are teenagers, if I go, hey, I'm going, can you guys, you know, I'll be back. I'm going to go do a set at this.
Do they bust club. Your balls?
Like, fucking A, man. They go, hey, Dad, aren't you going to put on your 90s suit? Aren't you going to wear the checkered vest with the lime green suit that you got at the Chess King?
Oh, boy. See that? I wonder, I mean, do they think you're funny at home?
they'll laugh. They won't laugh out loud, but they'll go like this.
Like, Dad.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. No, they don't give me the dad. They'll just go, that's a good one. Or they'll go, yeah, that one needs a little work.
Like the Tig Notaro, good one.
Yeah. She's funny, by the way. She's
hilarious. Hilarious. Well, actually, before we move on, let's get back to the irony versus the real shit. I'm, as a comedian, I'd say total, I have about 10 to 15 minutes, and I won't call it strong, but I can write jokes, and I don't want my act to be jokey, you know? I want it to be, and this is something I wanted to tell you. You and Marin have been the biggest educators outside of just watching stand up as to what comedy is and should and can be. And like, I started out, you know, my first 5 minutes was just jokes with twists at the end, you know. But, you know, watching I Am Comic and listening to WTF, I feel like I do have some deep shit that I could, you know, definitely talk about for a long time. But I'm still so deep in it that it's going to take a while to find the funny. You know what I mean?
Well, I got to tell you, Troy. I don't want to name drop, but I was having a latte with Jay-Z, rich rapper alive, and he said, "Jordan, how did you get so fly?" And I said, "By not being afraid to fall out the sky."
Ooh, baby.
And he said, "Let me have that. Let me write that down." He wrote that down. He used it in one of his rap songs.
Ooh, baby.
My kid. but there is some truth to that. I think, it doesn't matter what I think.
Yes, it does. That's why you're on the phone with me.
The truth is, man, if you talk about shit that is real and you're inherently a funny person and you feel confidence of being a comedian, then the laughs will come. And that said, there's nothing wrong with being a joke writer.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, funny people can be telling a story and then all of a sudden slip in a joke and go kind of wink like, hey, that was a joke.
That's another thing I
wonder. I've seen Mark Maron tell a joke. I'm very flattered, by the way. I'm flattered that you would lump me in with Mark, because I've watched that guy's career for a long time. Like, he did it back in the day when I did it.
You knew him back in the
day.
You guys came from the same quote-unquote class, right? I mean, around the same era.
Yeah, the same era. I mean, we didn't hang out. We ran into each other one time.
Yeah.
In fact, we actually share a credit that I reminded him
of. Short attention span theater.
Wow, you did your research that week in first week in jail. yeah, we both hosted that, and then we were partying one time at like an Aspen Comedy Festival,
doing blow off of Kennison's ass.
It wasn't blow. No, I never did blow with him. I think we were just smoking a joint or something.
I kid.
He thought I was just a bubbly kind of, transparent asshole, and I just thought he was kind of a grumpy asshole. But I've rekindled some. I wouldn't say we hang out, but
yeah,
I've hung out with him a couple times, and he's just super happy and super successful. I love his show, and it's certainly not about. I mean, his success is not based on writing the shtick.
No, it's about
he's prepared, but
his essence, I think.
And the only thing that bums me out though is now everybody says how they love him. Like,
oh,
I think he's
you
just
mean
found
now,
his own
like
way.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, like other famous comedians, like, oh, he's been so great.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Why weren't you by his side back in the day?
20 years ago. Yeah. So did you ever?
And then. The other person I would throw in there, and I mean I don't know him other than I interviewed him for the movie with Rich, but
yeah.
Louis C.K.
sure
has been able to take any topic, mm-hmm, and expound on it and extract humor from it in a non-jokey way,
mm-hmm,
that I think is really funny and inspiring.
Genius, and he's probably arguably the top of the respected comedy game right now, I'd say. Just his how prolific he is, and his how he can write a new hour and produce a television show and edit a television show and write a television show. That is, and edit it on the. I hear he edits it on a 13-inch MacBook.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's batshit crazy right there.
He should do it on the iPhone on the subway. That would be even better bragging. I fucking edit this shit on an iPhone.
So fuck you.
but it just goes to show you that it's like Jim Gaffigan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jim Gaffigan, Brian Regan, those guys are sillier comics.
Yes.
And it's like Louis C.K. and Mark Maron are like serious and get deep and
a little more attitude.
A little more attitude. Jim Gaffigan and Brian Regan, and even Jeff Foxworthy, mm-hmm. they have to go even further on the spectrum. Certainly, those three I named are prolific, or maybe rated G
mm-hmm.
compared to the other guys. But I mean, fucking funny,
funny
and
shit.
Prolific, and it's their personality. It's the way they say it and their perspective,
exactly,
their
yes.
point of view that's funny. So if you slip in a joke every now and then, that's okay, but it's really developing your point of view.
Right.
I mean, I, as a stand-up, never really got to the point of a strong comedic point of view that can take, as I think at the least you got to put in 10 years
to get a
comic point of view.
I believe that.
And then if you stop doing it, like I went and did other things, so my point of view developed maybe as a filmmaker,
and to
even longer.
Directing and...
As a director, yeah. It took longer to develop a point of view. And as a stand-up, I mean, there's guys that I see them do it and go, that's why I just dabble. You know, I just like doing it. I like performing. I like being silly.
So is
there's
that why
like,
you
from
kind
Louis
of...
Louis C.K. and to Jim Gaffigan and Mark Maron and, I mean, I could name... So Nick Kroll. Did I see a picture of you with Nick Kroll?
Yeah,
on
I met him at Helium in Philly.
First of all, that is so gay.
What
I
is
mean, that? That is so gay that you use that as your Twitter picture. I said, Troy, you're like a comedy nerd. I mean, I love it, but at the same time, I don't know what the kids say. I'm sorry.
I like the guy.
Oh, he's one of my favorites. He's one of my favorites. He consistently makes me laugh.
Yeah. His character,
even
his characterization.
Small parts in movies, yeah, but the common thread through all of his characters is the Nick Kroll signature sort of, it's tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
It's
there's still
fun.
A constant tone.
Yeah.
Even through the diversity of his whatever. Fabrice or El Chupacabra, there's still a common thread of, like you said, there's still some essence of Nick Kroll in everything.
Yeah, he makes me, he's one of my favorites. One of my favorites.
Definitely.
He's got a new Comedy Central show, if it hasn't aired yet.
Oh, yeah?
It's going to be huge in the Aleutian Islands after this.
Maybe Djibouti. Do you think it'll last?
Bringing it back. Whether a show lasts on Comedy Central or not
is a miracle.
It has no reflection on the talented men and women that make the show.
Well, let's talk
about. I've
seen
some of the funniest shit go on Comedy Central.
Yes.
Last 6 weeks. I mean, I went to the taping of the Benson Interruption.
Great show.
Doug Benson.
And guess what? It's getting...
I laughed. I loved it. It was like four episodes. I don't know how many, four, six?
Six.
That was funny.
Guess what's happening to them? They're not even being released on a DVD. They're being released as bonus content on his next DVD, like his next stand-up special DVD. They're not even separating the Benson Interruption as a separate...
Well, that's up to marketing wizards that know better than you and I.
I can,
that could be no reflection on anything but the way the money, you know, it may
oh,
be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not saying
sense.
That's his decision at all. I realize that's the smarties with ties on. But just to get a television show on or get a movie made is a miracle. Now, how did you, was I Am Comic, did you get some financial backing or did you just start filming? Or, you know, did you go
that's,
to...
That's a great question.
Did you pitch it? Go ahead.
I pitched it as a show, I think, to Comedy Central and to a movie studio. Comedy Central has a series. The movie studio is to fund it as a documentary. You know, it would have gone to DVD.
Right.
And after those two pitches, I had a buddy of mine is a great producer, mm-hmm. and Rich Scheidner was involved, and I just said, you know what, guys, I got to start making it. So I started shooting with my own money, and I'm fortunate enough that I make
all that Burger King money.
So it was actually Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, okay.
Really wanted
Excuse
to know.
Me. I'm just fucking.
I'm serious. There was a string of Kentucky Fried Chicken commercials that we did.
Right.
And after the commercial was done, not the same day, but like the next day or that weekend, my crew, a handful of them, would go with me to film interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So,
helped. You weren't there like on every sit down with the comedians.
Oh, I was there for every inch of film.
Oh, okay.
If I'm hiring my sound man and my camera woman and my wardrobe stylist and whatnot,
you're making sure your product is up to your vision.
Well, Rich and I did the questions too, so
right.
It would be like, hey, we're shooting a commercial on Wednesday and Thursday. I go, hey, can you guys meet me tomorrow? No, it was goodwill from the filmmaking team that I use consistently.
Okay.
I said, there's no money in this documentary. I can't pay you.
Right.
But everybody got a check from Wednesday and Thursday for shooting the chicken.
Right.
So we got paid for shooting the chicken. Now do me a solid.
Yeah.
Come interview these comedians with me.
That is a
brilliant.
So
we would go to the Improv or the Laugh Factory and we'd set up.
Backstage.
There's a lot of comedy documentaries that have come and gone, or some that'll be made. Some will be great. I mean, there's great comedy documentaries I can tell you about, and we should, so that people in Jakarta will know. But mine looks really good in places. And then it's just me. Well, it does look good.
I was just saying, it looks good in all places to me.
No, but you're high, because sometimes it's me with a camcorder,
yeah,
and it's unwatchable. And then Nikki Glaser,
yes,
talented comedian, very
yes.
funny.
Yep,
young comedian with a point of view. I think she's really developing a point of view, and she's sexy.
Yes, very. I was going to say that. Also, making the rounds on the podcast lately, as a lot of comedians are. But yeah,
she's a podcast whore. I got to tell her to stop.
Well, tell her. Put in the good word for me. I'm single, so. But
yeah, but you're a felon.
Hey, she's a comedian. She obviously has a soft spot for dark people.
You know what? I'm gonna put in a word. I'm gonna tweet it as soon as we're done.
Done. I like it. Thank you.
Nikki
Glaser.
I know that. No, oh, her shit is it's just me with a camcorder and a little wireless microphone set up. I bought this fucking dumb lens, and I didn't know how to focus, and it was autofocus, and so it's like kind of blurry.
Well, there is one scene where it's obviously you holding the camera with iPod headphones in, and I think it's where you're introducing how you met Rich Scheidner. But I think that adds...
I'm holding the camera myself, Troy.
I understand that, and I think that adds some... To me, I mean, obviously, from your perspective, you're trying to make the most professional product you can. But I think I like that. I like that about it, that it's not it takes away pretentiousness, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, thank you.
It really does, and so
makes it human. It adds humanity.
Exactly.
Now, if I had done that same interview, and your listeners are going to go rent I Am Comic from iTunes.
Yes.
And if you have Netflix, you can get it on Netflix.
But give the man some
money
and
buy
it. Buy it, please.
Yeah, buy it. Or go on iTunes. Yeah, even iTunes renting, I think I get 37 cents.
There you go. There's your kid's birthday party.
See? It's pony now.
Well,
it would have been ironic if I wore a panda suit for no reason. Never mentioned it. Just wearing a panda suit, yeah. And I'm interviewing people.
Yeah. with full masks, so they wouldn't even, you know, know that you're
Troy, you're a genius. Then I could have looped everything later.
Yes. You could have even put in someone else that you, you know, whatever. You could have put in Al Franken.
Al Franken. Senator Al Franken.
He may not ask the same questions as you, but this dude, I got to ask you about, if you recall, a fella named Steve Roy, who developed the software with the algorithm.
What? Steve Roy is a nice man.
Oh, I'm not.
He developed the Comedy Evaluator Pro.
What the fuck?
And I found him on the internet.
You found him? Okay.
I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
I found him on the web, and I'll tell you. I'll tell you how I found him.
Yes, that's what
I. Okay.
Yeah.
A pure documentary. You follow your subjects, and you have a thesis. You know, you have a point of view. And
sure.
You're going out. Okay. So for me, it was like, well, let's just interview funny people. Let them be funny. Don't fuck with the funny. But I got this character of Rich Scheider,
who yes, and
he cajoled into doing stand-up. And I thought, what would fuck with Rich? Guy that's been on The Tonight Show and yeah. Had his own HBO specials. You know what would really fuck with Rich? And I'm not, it's not behind his back. I'm just saying, I want to do things that will fuck with you. How about a comedy coach? If I could get a comedy coach, which I don't even believe it's possible to teach someone to be funny.
Hell no.
And I'm looking for the comedy coach and Googling around.
Mm-hmm.
And the mad genius of Steve Roy
yes.
Shows up on like one of the promoted Google sites.
Oh,
you know,
like top of the list.
He's there. And I called him. I told him what I was doing. He happened to be coming to L.A. because I think he lives in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Super sweet guy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of comics get irate. Todd Glass
love
said,
Todd
I want to hit him in the face. I want to hit that man in the face with a rake.
Who, Todd Glass?
I just hit him in the face with a rake. Yeah, Todd said that about Steve. He goes,
oh.
I just want to beat him. I want to hit him in the face with a fucking rake. Yeah.
Todd Glass is from Philly too, right?
Todd Glass. I did the King of Prussia with Todd Glass.
Oh, right on. Wait, that wasn't the...
In a club called...
The Cabaret,
Bananas.
Was it? Oh, okay, okay.
And then there was the Comedy something else.
Cabaret.
There was a big club downtown.
Yeah, that...
Comedy Cabaret.
I think they bumped down to... Now it's like called Giorgio's Restaurant, and they have one night of comedy. Because I looked when I was looking for open mics. Honestly, nowadays, the only like legit... open mic and or comedy club who does it right, who Todd Glass goes into thoroughly in your movie as far as doing it right, is Helium in Philly. The first time I did my first open mic was at a club called the Laugh House in South Philly, and I had no idea it was a black room. And I'm not saying anything racial, but you understand, you're in the business, there's separate worlds, right? And I get up there and I start out with this joke that starts out intellectual and then goes very vulgar real quick. And you know, it wasn't even crickets, it was this 300-pound woman calling me a pervert and a weirdo. And do you know the legendary Wid?
Oh yes.
He was
the
host.
Legendary Wid is like for your listeners, he's like Carrot Top's
yes.
crazy uncle.
Yes.
Carrot Top's crazy uncle. Like he would take a doll baby and try to cram it into a globe.
Yes, that would
And then he would look at the audience and go, it's so hard to get ahead in this world.
Yes.
And then he would throw the prop on the stage. And then he would pick up just a piece of rope that had been tied like a pretzel and go, frayed knot.
Yeah.
And then throw it away. Like they're stupid yeah. visual puns.
Yes, exactly. It's like your grandfather fucked Carrot Top. He's exactly like that. It's so funny. But
you had to take it to a sexual place. I said... crazy uncle. I'm trying to be PG here. But anyway, I digress. You were saying that you're a racist and you were performing in a black club.
So I'm extremely racist.
And a woman called you. Did she say, honey? Did she go,
no,
you're perverted, honey?
No, she was, first of
did
all.
Did she go, ooh, child, like
first
that?
Of all,
I mean, come on, tell us the real deal.
No, not even like shame. I'm not even going to say anything. But she's, of course, she's sitting like front and center. All I can see is the spotlight in my face and this large lady who, by the way, is texting with her like screen brightness up all the way most of the show. And so the WID, he was the MC, that's why I mentioned him, which is weird for a black room, I guess, maybe not. The WID introduces
me. The WID is skinny. He's like a spindly old white man.
The black crowd loved him, by the way, because they love laughing at white people, which I do too. Anyway, go up there, tell that one jerk joke, and the lady's like, pervert, weirdo, and I go into my next premise, and the WID standing right next to me. I don't think I was up there a minute, and that was my first time. So from that, I didn't even get heartbroken. Like, I thought it was gave me balls of steel, like, I got to do this again and do it right and for a crowd that might be more accepting. You know what I mean?
But it could be a black crowd. I mean, all kidding aside, a good comedian should be able to go up in front of any crowd.
Sure.
Now, it's obvious if I go up at a black club because I'm white and I'm middle-aged and I'm overweight. I went up at the J spot when Rich went up in the movie and got a couple laughs, but certainly by anyone's standards, it was a bomb.
Why didn't?
But it wasn't because it was a black club and I was a middle-aged white guy. It was because I wasn't prepared.
No,
I mean, but you should be able to get them on your side and see it as a challenge. People hate Carlos Mencia.
I have,
and if you.
Go ahead.
And he's in I Am Comic.
Yes.
And after seeing the
possibly
the movie,
one of the most controversial things to come out of that movie.
Well, that's how, you know, Mark Maron did a Q&A with Rich and I at a comedy festival.
Oh, yeah?
In Portland.
Right.
Yeah? And that's where he first saw the movie and got the idea to have Carlos on the show.
Right.
Saying, did you really admit, or were you kind of joking?
Yeah.
And
because it's really hard to tell.
I think Louis C.K. had Dane Cook on.
Yes.
After years. I think the movie actually kind of was a catalyst to get Mark to do it with Carlos and for Louis C.K. to do it with Dane Cook. Because when we interviewed Louis C.K. and asked him about stealing and the Dane Cook thing, he said, no, I don't want to talk about it. It's behind me. But I think he brilliantly brought it back from the dead
with
Dane Cook on that episode. But the point was that people loathe Carlos Mencia, but he does say some interesting, brilliant things. And he's a nice guy, by the way. I mean,
and here's the thing.
I don't have material for him to steal, so I don't have a beef. But he said some interesting things in the documentary I Am Comic that's available on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, if you're only doing jokes in front of your type of crowd, you're not really reaching your full potential. Because if you're black and you go up in a black club, of course everyone's going to relate to your stories better. So that's cool and that's fun and get the money and get your free drinks. But try expanding and try go up at Latino night.
Well, look at Pryor and Bill Cosby, universally loved by anybody and just exactly to your point. Of course, that was my first time. My material wasn't there, so I wouldn't have done well either way. But
you're in what county? Chesterfield County?
Chester County.
You're in Chester County. Okay. I know a gig about 30 minutes from where you live. It's an Amish nightclub, I'm going to get you booked there.
Are you?
And if you can kill at this Amish club,
are you joking right now?
You,
I don't think you're
joking. Troy, there's no fucking Amish club.
They laugh. They can't laugh. Is laugh modern technology? Laughter is modern technology?
No, but I mean, what are they going to serve? Butter?
Cocaine. I mean, you didn't hear about that?
No. Amish, are they okay?
Here in Pennsylvania, a couple years ago, there was a Amish drug ring. That is totally true. Totally true. You can look that up. But
what was their drug of choice?
What was their drug of choice?
Yeah.
I think they were selling weed and coke. So, I don't know. It's Pennsylvania,
nothing
dude.
Sacred anymore.
It's Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's a weird place. You go towards Philly and it's very, urban and... are you familiar with like the main line of Pennsylvania? It's kind of a wealthy pocket out right outside of Philly.
Sure.
Well, either way, just say yeah.
There's that.
And then there's like parts of Pennsylvania that may as well be Alabama too. So it's a weird dichotomy. And so the rooms here can be... very diverse, no matter racial lines or socioeconomic. So you're right. It's all about being funny and relatable on a universal level, which is not easy for a young comic. And
let me give you some advice. I'm to you and all the young comics that listen.
Totally listening.
In any situation, whether you're on a cruise ship, a hip club in the Village of New York, are out in the pastures of Missouri,
yeah,
doing a comedy show. When in doubt, just pick up some weird prop and put it on your dick.
Well, that's what I usually
and
do
that
at parties.
Will make everyone laugh. See, you did it. You follow your instinct.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry. For
the cough is attractive. It makes for a good podcast.
It's sexy, right?
I hope you're recording this, right? You're recording this?
Absolutely, absolutely. So what else? what's your main focus right
stretch
now?
Stretching out, Troy.
Yes. Stretching for time. I need some crowd work
here. Do you have a certain
here.
Amount of time you have to fill, or do you edit this, or what do you do?
I edit it, but there's never any set time. It usually, it depends on what it is. The interview shows are usually a little longer. If it's just me, it's usually about a half hour.
Do you map out the questions? You're winging it.
I have questions written, none of which I've asked so far.
Gotcha. Let me tell you a couple of things real quick. There's a documentary on Bill Hicks called
American.
Was it?
Yeah, I just watched American? It. Yeah.
Yep. It's really good. It's visual. They make a lot of visual out of the pictures.
Yes, like, I like the way it was produced. Yeah.
It was well produced. Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work.
Yes.
You see that one?
Half of it.
That's one of the best. I mean, that's insight into a comic's brain. And Joan Rivers, God bless her, opens up her calendar and sees these white pages. She's like, I got to fill dates.
Right.
I got to get booked. Mm-hmm. And she makes it happen. And she writes every day.
Mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of interviewing her.
Really? How is she in person? Is she a diva? Is she nice?
Okay. Let me just tell you this.
I don't want to get anybody in trouble here. So,
first of all, Wayne Fetterman, the Jew that I'm performing with.
Stop using that word.
He went with me. He went with me just because he lives in New York and he's my friend. So mm-hmm. I said, hey, come with me. And he likes comedy and he's a comic. So the two of us went up there with a little camera and an old microphone. And we went to Joan Rivers' penthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the nicest, most gracious comedian, person, woman, whatever you want to call her.
Yep.
She was delightful.
That is
good
to hear.
She was an elegant, a gracious host and made us feel right at home. And it was just, it was great. It was like comedic royalty.
That is good to hear.
Despite what you may like her, you may not, you know, everybody has different tastes with comedy, but she was just a real professional. And so that's a great documentary. Then there's one in out of Boston that was made 7-10 years ago called When Stand Up Stood Out.
Oh, I have to look for that one.
It's by a guy, Fran Salamita, who was a comedian turned producer director.
Right.
And he hosted this comedy show on Fox when Fox was a new TV network, and a great guy. And it's all about the comedy scene in Boston. So there's this like Lenny Clark and
When was this made?
Stephen Wright. I think it was made 7 to 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it came out about 6 or 7 years ago. And I remember when he was making it.
Was it before when like Bill Burr was coming up? Before those guys?
I want to say it was before Bill Burr.
But more Stephen Wright's age.
Stephen Wright, Dennis Leary.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
Like Dennis Leary would have even been a young guy.
Right. And what was the name?
That's a great documentary for comedians. It's called When Stand Up Stood Out.
Okay.
I saw a rough cut years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to do comedy in Boston. The big club there was in a Chinese restaurant called the Ding Ho.
Yes.
The director, you know, the comedian buddy of ours, he's like, I don't know what to call it. I think I'm going to call it When Stand Up Stood Out. And I'm like, fuck, that's a terrible name.
Yeah.
I mean, When Stand Up Stood Out, it sounds so sentimental.
Yeah.
Give me a fucking break.
Yeah.
Call it Ding Ho.
Yes,
call
yes.
Call it A Night at the Ding Ho. Just call it Ding Ho and don't tell anyone why it's called Ding Ho. I would love to have a movie called Ding Ho.
Yes. Who wouldn't want that on their DVD shelf? That is...
It's just like something you could yell at a football game.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Ding Ho.
Yeah. Or that's something you yell at a bartender.
Hey, Ding Ho. There's a documentary called, I want to say it's called Open Mic.
Okay.
And Dave Chappelle did an interview, and there's a guy that was on, he got discovered, maybe he was on like the first season of The Last Comic Stand or something. Terrible documentary. Can't even get through it.
Right.
But, you know, you can fast forward to Dave Chappelle and some other people. Then there's one called, Robert Townsend did it.
I like him.
He seems like a nice guy. It's about black comedy with black comedians.
Weren't you going to do a documentary about that?
Yeah, I want to do Weeby Comics. I want to do one.
That's not official?
No, I got to get more chicken commercials.
Okay. And can I say this? I loathe commercials. Like if I'm watching TV, I change the channel. But I went to Super Lounge, and for the listeners, go to Super Lounge. What is it? .tv.
.tv.
And you can check out some of the stuff he and a couple other of his compatriots have produced. You have a way of making commercials funny. I don't know what it is. Do you have any part in the writing, or do you just direct the acting?
I always have a key in the writing.
Okay.
But I do not birth the commercials.
The
advertising agencies do.
They come up with the premise.
They come up with the premise. They sell the premise. And the advertising agency guys, I mean, God bless them, man. They pitch all kinds. Like, people bitch about commercials, and then you see the ones that you love. That's because these men and women are creative, funny fucking people.
Mm-hmm.
That pitch 12 ideas to get one sold.
Yes, and that's that. Also, I was listening to a podcast with the guest was Anthony Jeselnik, another joke guy, and
I interviewed him for I Am Comic. He didn't make the cut because I only had like 2 minutes with him.
Yeah.
And now he's all blown up. Now he's all big time Comedy
Big
Central
time. And at one point he was writing for, I think it was Fallon. And he described like, it's a steady job that I wouldn't mind having. But he had to turn in 65 jokes a day and with no guarantees of any of them reaching air. And having to write
in someone else's tone. You know what I mean? I just
get this, Troy. Guess who Anthony Jeselnik shared an office with when he worked at Fallon?
Who?
Wayne Fetterman, Jew.
Oh, it's coming all back around.
It all comes back to Fetterman. And in fact, in the movie I Am Comic, available on Netflix on demand or iTunes for download or purchase.
At your local DVD.
Still running on Showtime.
Or at your local DVD.
There is no local DVD store. There's no DVD series. DVDs are dead. You got to buy it online.
That
you
is
go to iamcomic.com, iamcomicmovie.com, whatever. But in the movie I Am Comic, Fetterman explains that collectively between him, Jeselnik, and another guy they hired from CNN that just like wrote news bits all the time, less a comedian than more a writer, producer.
Yeah.
They would turn in about 200 jokes a day.
Yeah.
To get maybe 12 in the monologue.
And so who has final cut? Is it the head writer or
Jimmy
is
Fallon?
Oh, he decides. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Jimmy Fallon goes in and Jimmy writes jokes himself.
Yeah.
They pitch him to Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he picks his favorites and then does a, it was interesting. I tried to sneak a camera in, but it's like, it was like Stalag 13 on NBC with all these, you know, I wanted to film it. Jimmy Fallon tests his monologue on a tour group that's going through NBC studios at 30 Rock.
On a daily basis?
And then he kind of gets daily basis. He's a hardworking man.
That is a good idea. Is that normal for late night hosts to do that? I don't think Letterman does that shit.
I can tell you Letterman does it. I can tell you Jay Leno does not.
I wouldn't.
Hey, Phil, listen, you people in the tour group, I'm going to run some jokes by you.
Yeah. What a bastard. I'm sorry. There's just too many things. So at this point in the podcast, my Pro Tools decided to stop recording, and we continued to talk for a little while. So you'll just have to jump back in and figure it out for yourself. Time I did stand up was like 2 years ago, but I say that I've only been doing it for a year because of there was a long break in between there, and I see people like Nick Thune and Hannibal Buress, he's my age, and I get jealous because they've had 8-10 years of experience already under their belt. But at the same time, I've had life experience, but I guess what I'm trying to get to is do you think a 28-year-old can still, 10 years from now, get into it and be successful? Like, obviously there's no age limit, but what are your thoughts on starting that late? Because you said you started in, college?
I started a little bit, at the same time I went to college.
Right.
A little bit before. And see, 2 years of college is fun, but a waste of time. Like, wow, I wish I'd have just hit the road even sooner.
Yeah.
But that's in your own head, man. I think it's all in your own head.
Oh.
I think there's no one there's no one to compete against. You and Hannibal Buress are not going to be up for the same spot at the nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a way, I guess you're competing because, people have so many dollars to spend on comedy, but
there will always be a...
You're not competing against him.
Right.
I think the reason Marc Maron is successful now is because he's realizing he's himself. He's not competing against anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Louis C.K. seemed to find that out sooner than a lot of people, to take charge. And he works, he probably had to work a little harder to break through when there was a glut of comedians. And
yeah.
He did.
Yeah. And there's another guy.
And he's that work ethic. So, hey, let me say this. Okay. Rodney fucking Dangerfield.
The heaviness.
Left comedy, sold aluminum siding in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And then came back and did stand-up in his, 40, I guess, late 30s, 40s, maybe even 50s.
Right.
That's when he got started. So it doesn't matter. I mean,
Thank you. I mean,
there's a book called The Last Laugh.
Okay.
Okay. By Phil Berger. It's probably an older book now. It's probably in its third or fourth edition.
Maybe I'll get that because check this out. I'm allowed to have 10 books in jail. They have to come from the publisher, but I am allowed to have 10 books, so maybe I'll put that on the list for my mom to send to me.
Have to come from the publisher? What does that mean? You have to come from the publisher.
You have to order directly because it has to be sealed up. Otherwise, they could, if your drug dealer...
There's like a file in it or something?
Well, if your drug... That, or if your drug dealer wanted to do the old carve out the pages trick and put some weed in there, you know what I mean?
Are they still falling for that?
I don't know, but the dem's the rules.
I would put some acid in the pages.
Oh, dude.
I would lace the pages with acid and then act like you're falling asleep and you're just like holding your book against your forehead.
Yeah. It's like, dude, just really tired right now. But I'm sorry, this book, The Last Laugh, proceed.
But it has the history of comics, of comedy, and just how it sort of evolved into what we know it as today. I mean, I want to say I read it in the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
so or late 80s, early 90s, and it took us from, like post-Mark Twain.
Okay.
You know, vaudeville, post-vaudeville,
like, right,
into the 50s, like the Borscht Belt comics,
mm-hmm.
and then into the nightclub scene and the beat scene, through your Lenny Bruce's and then the Robert Klein, Carlin, prior era, into what we now have, you know, television, how television cultivated the stand-up, and then into kind of the Seinfeldian era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Eddie Murphy, Whoopi Goldberg. And now I'm sure there's an updated edition, because the last edition I read, like Paula Poundstone would have been the that's where it stuck. But it's, you can fill in the gaps from there. You can have your Iglesias, what's the guy's name that I like?
Oh,
Gabriel Iglesias.
Yeah, the puffy guy. Is that his thing? The puffy. Yeah. You like him?
I find it silly. I find it entertaining.
I think he's like cute, funny. And I'm a heterosexual man, but I think he's cute, funny. I don't dislike him. I mean, it's personal taste. I'm geared towards the darker or even. I like joke tellers, even though, like I said, I'm trying to stray away from that. Like, what's the guy's Dan Mintz?
Mm-hmm.
He's a joker guy, and the one dude who is on The Office. Fuck, he's a producer. Ryan on The Office. What the?
You know, when I like mimics too. I like people that do characters and
yes,
and impressions and stuff. But I could never do, like, you know, I can't do the impressions.
I do. I like I had the opportunity through making friends from another podcast. They flew me out to Salt Lake City to do 5 minutes to open for a live podcast, and
wow,
it was amazing. It's
That's
on
good.
It's on YouTube. I'll send it to you. You can hear my. This is
posted for the listeners. Tell us now. We can pause. We can go watch it and come back.
To yes, I'll wait.
What is it? Give it.
I'll wait. But and I can honestly say I did very well, and that was the second time. Okay, we're back. So about the impressions, I do quote unquote impressions, but they're more just, okay, it's Elliot. The one I did was Elliot from E.T. when he's sick reciting or performing Richard III from Shakespeare. So I do kind of not just straight impressions. They're kind of twisted. I don't even know if that counts as, is that an impression or just a weird amalgamation of things.
That's an impression,
I guess. And the other one was Fred Schneider from the B-52s performing Jimi Hendrix's Foxy. So those were two impressions. The crowd liked it, so I'll shoot you a link to that. But
So that was a really cool experience for me to actually like go to another city to do stand up. That was cool. But beyond,
that's incredible. Your second time, you.
Oh yeah.
You, that's insane.
It's insane, but it sucks to go back to Pennsylvania and just be an open micer podcaster. You know what I mean? But I do. I'm not that negative. I do. I think that's great. I think it's great. And wrap it up in some roundabout way.
I do one. I do one impression.
Yeah.
Of another comedian. Of Todd Barry, do you know who he is?
Todd Barry, yes, love him.
I don't really know what else to say about Todd Barry. I just like the way he talks. I think he's a good joke writer.
Yeah.
Sometimes he talks, it's kind of drawn out, and then when he gets to the punchline, it's kind of faster like this.
It's kind of faster like this. Yeah, yes, that is a good impression. That is a perfect impression.
I used to do a Tommy Davidson.
Oh yeah, he's pretty like
I am comic
high energy. Oh yeah, I love his Zen.
He's high energy, and he clips his words like this, and he goes, "You know what? I am a cross between Chris Rock and Robin Williams."
Yes, and
that shit is real.
And I flow in between the two. his comedy Zen analogy was great. I showed that to my friend the other night. He loved that, but
I'm sending a tweet. I'm sending a tweet, Troy, to you.
Okay.
That we gave props. We had Mark Maron, Nikki Glaser.
We gave mad props.
Mentioned Jim Gaffigan.
And fuck Jay Leno.
Mad props. Right.
But
we had Todd Barry just now.
Todd Barry. There.
Todd Glass. I don't think Todd Glass follows his own Twitter though.
I think he makes a joke out of it. He makes a joke out of it. Have you heard his podcast? It's just all riffing mostly with other comedians.
I talked about the new one. He just is not. It's all spontaneous.
It's hilarious.
You know, the riff, for the listeners, if you haven't learned, the riff, it's a borrowed term from the jazz community.
I'm sorry, go
which
ahead.
Which is weed-smoking black people. We know
love it, love it.
Riff, the riff is when you're just making it up off the cuff.
With your friends, with the crowd, doesn't matter. And one of the most.
Who else did we give props to?
Tuss, Louie.
Hannibal Barrett.
Hanna-Barbera.
Hanna-Barbera. Louis C.K. gets enough love.
I'm sure he does. I think
Jew, you know, Wayne Fetterman.
Yeah, the Jew. Jimmy Fallon. Jezelnik.
Is he on Twitter?
If I don't know, I don't follow him. I would just shoot it to his girlfriend Schumer.
Okay, we got to wrap up because I got to get back to my little writing here.
Oh,
writing is the key, young people.
Yes, and
any stage time you can get. Oh, Heckler! I got to tell you, Heckler's a good movie.
Heckler
is a documentary.
Okay.
It follows actor Jamie Kennedy around.
Ooh.
And
I'm sure.
What are you?
No, some of his work.
But he gets heckled.
Yeah, and how he handles it.
And how he handles it, and they interview a bunch of other people, like Arsenio Hall, I think, is interviewed in it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Just real quick, sorry, but that's the thing. Like walking out of that first time when they called me a pervert and a weirdo. I thought of probably 2,000 things I could have said like 5 minutes after that. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, you have to do it and do it and do it and do it and get in it.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah, because Troy, if you're the guy that, ooh, I should have said.
Yeah.
It's like me when someone disses me and I go, ooh, you know what I should have said?
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to happen again. So
that's like me saying, ooh, I could have been a good comic someday, but.
I think you're going to be a great comic.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you being so nice and giving me this much time, and I can't wait for your next project. I hope Weeby Comic.
Weeby Comic.
I hope that.
See, that's a racial slur.
I thought that when I didn't want to say anything.
It's racial.
I didn't want to say anything, but I thought the same thing when I read that in an article somewhere, but. if Chris Rock's in it, then it's legit. So
that's what I'm trying to nail down. And if Chris Rock is listening, because I know he's, you know, surfing the web and listening to Comedy Progress, I would let him. I'd be honored for him to be an executive producer.
There you go.
Because Chris Rock makes anything funny.
Also,
Chris Rock will, anything he says will be funny.
Also, it would stop anyone from claiming that your production is racist because Chris Rock produced it. Yeah.
Because he's not a racist?
Because he's black.
Oh, I didn't even understand that.
That's
okay, man, I got to go.
Yes.
I'm glad we chatted.
Thank you so much.
I want to hear about the prison exploits.
You will hear about that, and I will shoot you the link to my Salt Lake City performance.
Perfect. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Jordan. Have a good night.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye. So that's that. That was a great interview or a chat. It didn't seem like an interview. I'd call it more of a chat. So thank you, Jordan Brady. You can follow him on Twitter at IamComic. You can follow me on Twitter we share the same Twitter account, so you'll find us both. No, my Twitter is at see you next Troy, all one word. And you can email the show at see you next Troysday at gmail.com. Hopefully there'll be a couple more episodes coming out in the coming week. Today is November 6th. Because on the 10th, I will no longer be able to podcast for 3 months, but I will see you on the other side if this won't be the last. So I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Thank you so much for eavesdropping, and until we meet again, keep your powder dry.